guys, and welcome back to That's Insane, a podcast where I talk about murder, medicine, and maybe more, but most definitely more because there's a lot of weird shit out there. My name is Aurelia, and I am your host. I'm so happy to be back. I took an extra week off. That's my dog playing with her toy back there. So I'm just going to let her be because she's being calm. So you're going to hear the squeaking. I apologize. But I took an extra week just so that I could really fine tune this episode. It was really nice taking a break. Of course, like I missed. Okay, maybe we won't. It was really nice taking a break, but, you know, I'm not going to say that I'm not going to take breaks like that again, because it was nice to kind of recollect and take time to, like, enjoy the weather and enjoy friends. I celebrated my birthday. It was a great time, but I also don't always want those breaks to mean there's no episodes. So I might kind of play around with the idea of maybe doing a couple months on and then maybe like a 3-week intermission like I just did, where I have like shorter stories, or maybe, I don't know. It's just something I was thinking. I'm not saying I'm going to keep taking breaks, but it was nice. But I am super happy to be back, and I'm ready to tell you guys, today's episode. Today is a weird one. I really like this one. It was pretty cool researching it. As always, all of the show notes are, wait, all of the resources, God, you take a couple weeks off, man. All of the research links, sources are in the show notes. As always. Anyway, I don't think I have anything. I'm trying to think. Oh, I'm sure many of you have watched Quiet on Set. What the fuck? And it makes me feel so bad because I grew up watching all of those shows and watching a lot of those actors and actresses and stuff. And I remember when they all like had their freakouts or have like their moment in the media where it's like, what the fuck are they doing? And then you hear about what was happening and it's like, now I feel bad that we like ostracize them, like Amanda Bynes and everything. It's just, it's fucking bananas and disgusting. And if you haven't watched Quiet on Set, definitely go watch it. There was like another one. This is a little older, but if you haven't watched American Nightmare, I think it's on Netflix.
Dahlia, honey, stop that.
I think it's on Netflix. It's only 3 episodes, but I think they're like an hour long. It is so good. And I don't want to give anything away, but it's basically like the real life Gone Girl. And you have to watch it if you haven't already. As far as true crime news, I can't think of anything off the top of my head. So let's just get into it. So I don't think that there's any like trigger warnings or anything for this. So, okay. Today I'm going to be talking to you about the disappearance of Michael Rockefeller. So on November 17th, 1961, 23-year-old, okay, I just realized this says November 17th, but other ones say November 19th. So either November 17th or November 19th, 1961, 23-year-old Michael Rockefeller and a Dutch anthropologist, René Wassing, I believe, were in a dugout canoe. Again, this is something that it says it was a dugout canoe, but then others say that it's a small motorboat, so I don't know. But a dugout canoe is basically like a canoe that's made of a tree trunk or tree bark, and we're about 3 miles from shore when their boat capsized near the mouth of the Elandon River in like South New Guinea area. The two had taken 2 local teenagers as like tour guides or whatever you want to call it, and they swam to shore to find rescue while Rockefeller and Wassing clung to the overturned boat for almost a day. Eventually, Rockefeller said he thought he could swim the 12 miles to shore. I don't know how it went from 3 to 12. I guess they were drifting to shore, and then fashioned a life preserver out of 2 gas tins that he tied together with his belt. Rockefeller told Wassing, "I think I can make it," before swimming away towards the shore. Wassing was rescued the next day, but Rockefeller was never seen again. So Michael Rockefeller was born on May 18th, 1938, and he was the last child of Nelson Rockefeller, who was the New York governor and eventually vice president. He was the grandson to John D. Rockefeller, who was the American financier, and the great-grandson of John D. Rockefeller Sr., who was the co-founder of Standard Oil. So, shmoney, money, money. But even as a child, he was a keen observer. He was intrigued by the unknown and the unexplored. He attended Harvard and graduated cum laude with a Bachelor in Arts in History and Economics. Oh, my God.
Honey, I think we should find a different toy.
Maybe just a different toy. Okay. You can have that later, okay? I know that I know you like it, but okay. So he graduated with a Bachelor of Arts in History and Economics, and then he also served as a private in the U.S. military for about 6 months. But although Nelson Rockefeller anticipated his son would soon follow in his footsteps, Michael was more like entranced by art and didn't really want to sit in boardrooms and conduct meetings, which I can't blame him. I would also not want to do that. His father had just founded and opened the Museum of Primitive Art, which is now called the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City. Here, there are exhibits consisting of like Nigerian and Aztec and Mayan artwork where that are displayed. And these inspired Rockefeller, Michael Rockefeller, to seek out his own primitive art, quote unquote, which is a term that's no longer used to describe non-Western art. So there's like a lot of language in here that's not what would be used today, and you'll see when I get there, and I'll talk about it when I get there. This whole story, I think, is you know what, we'll just get there. So before the disappearance, he had already spent months living in Japan and Venezuela, but he wanted to embark on an expedition somewhere where very few people had or ever would see. He went on an expedition for Harvard's Peabody Museum of Archaeology and Ethnology to study the Dani tribe of Western Dutch New Guinea, which is now part of the Indonesian province of South Papua. On this expedition, they filmed dead birds. Like, that's the title. They didn't just, like, film dead birds, which was an ethnographic documentary filmed by Robert Gardner. By the 1960s, Dutch colonial authorities and missionaries had already been on the island for nearly a decade, but many of the locals had never really seen a white man. During this expedition, Michael and a friend briefly left the expedition to study the Azmat tribe and their art, which is one of the last surviving Stone Age cultures. And this art is like super hard to get, and I'll talk about it. So the Azmat have had very, very limited contact at this time with the outside world and believed that beyond their island, the world was inhabited by spirits. They live on the western half of the island of New Guinea called Papua, and this area is the largest and the least developed region of Indonesia's 27 provinces with about 65,000 inhabitants total. About 85% of the area is covered in swamps and forest, which are largely unexplored. However, I did read that, like, that's kind of their source of income, I guess, if you will. Like, a lot of logging by them as well as outside corporations, if you will, has really kind of limited that, which then limits their way of life. So the Azmats do still live a life controlled by maintaining harmony between the world of living of the living and the spirit world with ceremonies that use large carvings and intricate masks, which all have their own function and meaning. These ceremonial objects are famous for their intricate carvings and large scale, and then, as mentioned, Azmat art is extremely rare. For a long time, the Azmat people were isolated because of their harsh environment and warlike reputation, but in the 1950s, missionaries and the Indonesian government began colonizing the area. So I want to say I don't think that they were isolated because of their harsh environment and warlike reputation. I think they were isolated because they didn't want fucking people coming in and taking over their land, which is exactly what happened. So anyway, this caused the Azmat tradition of headhunting and cannibalism to end in the 1970s. So headhunting is basically like you take the head of your enemy that you kill and use it like as not like a trophy, but kind of like a trophy. The main village studied was the Otsjenep. Fuck, I should have looked this up. Hold on. Okay, so just to clarify, headhunting is actually like taking the head of your enemy as like trophies. And then I wasn't too far off. It's far off. It's just Otsjanep. So where was I? Blah, blah, blah. 50s. Welcoming, tolerated. Okay, so the main village studied is the Otsjanep, which was home to one of the major Azmat communities, but it's not a very welcoming one. Again, I feel like the term welcome is not the issue here. The locals tolerated the photography, but they would not allow the researchers to purchase cultural artifacts like intricately carved wooden pillars, which serve as part of the rituals and the religious rites. So again, it's like super hard to get any of this artwork. And Michael Rockefeller wanted, that was kind of like why he wanted to go back and get some of this art to bring back to his dad's museum. So war between the villages was very common, and Michael learned that the Azmat warriors would often take the heads of their enemies, like I said, and eat their flesh. In 1957, just 3 years before Michael first visited, there was a massacre between two Azmat tribes, the Otsjanep and the Omadisep, yeah, which resulted in the deaths of dozens of each other's men. The Dutch colonial government, having just taken control of the island, attempted to put a stop to the violence and went to disarm the Otsjanep tribe, but cultural misunderstandings, okay, resulted in the Dutch opening fire on the Otsjanep. And then this was like the Otsjanep's first encounter with firearms. And in this encounter, they actually witnessed four of their Geus, it's J-E-U-S, Geus, which are their war leaders. They witnessed four of them be killed. So, after the initial expedition ended at the beginning of September, Michael Rockefeller returned home briefly before heading back to New Guinea to study the Azmat and collect their distinctive woodwork, their distinctive woodwork art for the museum, which he was a trustee for. He spent his time in New Guinea nearly 2 months actively engaging with the culture, the art, and the tribe while recording the ethnographic data. He wrote a letter home stating, quote, "I am having a thoroughly exhausting but most exciting time here. The Azmat is like a huge puzzle with the variations in ceremony and art style forming the pieces. My trips are enabling me to comprehend, parentheses, if only in a superficial, rudimentary manner, and parentheses, the nature of this puzzle," end quote. So he was really immersing himself in this culture. On the day of his disappearance, Michael and Wassing were headed towards the village of Basim in a small motorboat with two local Azmat teenagers. The villagers actually warned the two several times that the currents were way too strong for that little boat, but the two decided to sail anyway. And as their boat approached the southern shore on November 19th, 1961, a squall, which is like this rapid increase in wind, churned the water and caused the boat to capsize. At this time, after clinging to the overturned boat for several hours, like I mentioned, Michael told Wassing, "I think I can make it." And then he swam off and he was never seen again. As the family was obviously very rich and very connected, there was no expense spared in the search for Michael. There were ships and airplanes and helicopters that searched the region. This kind of scared like the Azmat people as well, or the Otsjanep people, because they had never seen a helicopter. Nelson Rockefeller and his wife also traveled to various parts of Indonesia to ask for help in the search for their son. But despite all of these efforts, Michael's body was never found. After 9 days, the Dutch minister stated, quote, "There is no longer any hope of finding Michael Rockefeller alive," end quote. Which, like, damn, dude. However, as I'm sure most parents would do, the Rockefellers continued to believe there was a chance that Michael might appear, but they did have to leave the island. 2 weeks later, the Dutch called off the search. The official cause of death for Michael Rockefeller is listed as drowning, and he was declared legally dead 3 years later in 1964. So, obviously that's not the end of it, because this wouldn't be a weird story for our Weird Wednesday if there wasn't some conspiracy and theories and stuff behind it. So we're going to get into Michael's disappearance and the theories behind it. It, of course, was like a media sensation, and the rumors and theories were just like all over the media and the tabloids, not to mention it's the son of like oil tycoon or the great-great-grandson of oil tycoon. Like, it's going to be everywhere. Some people suggested that Michael was eaten by sharks, and others claimed he was still alive, living in the jungle of New Guinea. Of course, the Dutch denied all of these rumors. In 2014, Carl Hoffman, a reporter for the National Geographic, revealed in his book, Savage Harvest, A Tale of Cannibals, Colonialism, and Michael Rockefeller's Tragic Quest for Primitive Art. And in this book, he made several inquiries that, or he said that several inquiries made by the Netherlands resulted in evidence that the Azmat had killed Michael. I want to start by saying this. In 2014, if you're still referring to non-Western people as savage, I'm already not loving the contents of what's going to be in this book. So in this book, he claims that two Dutch missionaries on the island both had lived among the Azmat for several years and spoke their language. And apparently these missionaries told authorities that they heard from the Azmat that some of them had killed Michael. The police officer that was sent to investigate the crime the following year, Wim van de Waal, perhaps, came to the same conclusion and even produced a skull that the Azmat claimed belonged to Michael. So the question was, why would the Dutch hide this info if it were true? Well, as I mentioned, they had already kind of... they shot four of the people in the tribe, and then by 1962, the Dutch had already lost half of the island to the new state of Indonesia, and they feared that if it were believed that they couldn't control the native population, then they would be ousted. Again, maybe don't control people that aren't like yours. Like, that's not, you know, perhaps. Anyway, so let's talk about Carl Hoffman. He is a big component of what is the main thing people think of when they hear about Michael Rockefeller's disappearance. No, Dahlia. Carl Hoffman started investigating these half a century old claims by traveling to Otschenep, posing as a journalist, documenting the culture of the Azmat people. His interpreter overheard a man telling another member of the tribe not to discuss the American tourist who had died there. First of all, he wasn't really a tourist. I mean, I guess he was, but still. When the interpreter asked who that man was, he was told it was Michael Rockefeller. So that right there, first of all, you're going to find out I don't fucking believe Carl Hoffman's story for a fucking minute. That right there already says to me that it's not true, because you're like, imagine you're seeing two people whisper and you hear them say like, oh, don't tell her what we just said. And then you say, hey, what did you say? And they immediately tell you. It's like, that's quite literally what their entire conversation was just about, is not telling you. But they just very quickly gave up that information. I don't know. It just doesn't sit right with me. So apparently Hoffman learned it was common knowledge on the island that the Azmat people of Otschenep killed a white man in the act of reprisal, which is basically like in a revenge killing. Because of the Dutch killing the Otschenep Geus, the Dutch missionary said the tribesmen initially thought that Michael was a crocodile, but as they came closer, like after he came up on shore, they realized it was a Tuan, which means a white man. The men that Michael allegedly encountered were Geus themselves and were the sons of those that were killed by the Dutchman. Be so fucking for real. And all, like, that sounds straight from like some campfire ghost story you would tell. And it's just like, of course those were the ones that he came across. I don't know. It's just like, I just don't buy it. So apparently hesitant at first, they eventually speared and killed him before cutting off his head, cleaved his skull to eat his brain, and cooked and ate the rest of his flesh. His blood was drained and the tribesmen drenched themselves in it while they performed ritual dances and sex acts. Come on. Like, to me, that's just to further the stereotype that people are like savages and like do crazy shit. Like that, that to me, that didn't happen. Perhaps they do ritual dances and engage in sex acts and stuff like that. I also saw somewhere that they were like the men engage in like homosexual acts for like in these ceremonies. And to me, it just screams like that's why these people are bad, is because they do things like that. It's just like, I just don't buy it. I don't buy anything that story. Like, that just sounds so, like, again, and they just sat there and were like, don't tell them about this. And then they just give them the full ass fucking thing. And here's my other thing. If they killed a white man and they're so like against having other people around them, one, why were those two Dutch missionaries still alive? And two, why the fuck would you go there, Carl Hoffman? Why would you go to the island where allegedly you believe that they were, they murdered a white man just like you? Like, what the fuck? It's just, to me, it's just stupid. But anyway, because of their theology, allegedly, the Ashtonet believed that they were restoring the balance to the world. The white men had killed four of them, and now they had taken retribution. Again, to me, that still doesn't make sense, because 4-1 doesn't really add up. But anyway, so they consumed Michael's body so they would absorb the energy and power that had been taken from them. Again, to me, this sounds like a white person trying to come up with what they think a non-white person or an islander or whatever would do, to sound so horrendous, and then what silly reason they can think of that they would be like, oh, this is why, so that people would sit there and be like, oh my God, what savages, like stupid shit. Now, even though this story was allegedly told to Carl Hoffman by the Ashtonet people, no one who actually participated in the murder ever came forward. So it's simply a story that they all heard. To me, it sounds like an urban legend. You know what I mean? Hoffman said one day, shortly before he left the island, he saw a man miming killing as part of a story he was telling, including stabbing someone with a spear, shooting an arrow, and chopping off the head. He said that he heard words relating to murder. So I guess all of a sudden, he's only been there for who knows how long, and now he can speak the language. Apparently, he heard these words, so he began to film, but the story was already over. How convenient for him. He did apparently catch an epilogue by this same person after the story was finished, where basically the person is saying, like, don't tell this story to another person. Keep it just for us. If you tell them, you'll die. I'm afraid you'll die. It's like, first of all, then why would you tell me that? I don't want to have that information. I don't want to be responsible for that information. Like, and again, why is he saying, like, hey, keep this story to yourself, when they've clearly already told the Dutch missionaries and Carl Hoffman what happened? Like, none of it makes sense. And like, the phrasing is so like vague, and it's just like repeated over and over, like, this is just for us, don't tell anybody, like, if they know, they'll kill you, like, whatever. It's just stupid. It's just really stupid to me, and I really hate it. It's just really fucking dumb. As I was reading it, I was like, shut up. So other theories include Michael being taken captive by the villagers. In 1969, journalist Milt Macklin traveled to the island to investigate Michael's disappearance. He dismissed any reports of Michael living as a captive, but did say that there was circumstantial evidence that supported the idea he had been killed. But the circumstantial evidence was the history of the Dutch killing four of the Ashtonet people, and the headhunting was seen as part of eye for an eye, and perhaps Michael found himself in that cycle. Like, there's not even circumstantial evidence. Like, circumstantial evidence is like, hey, at this time you were here, and at this time these people were also here. Like, there's literally no circumstantial evidence other than the fact that they believe the Ashtonet people do eye for an eye. So, which a lot of places did back in the day as well. So, again, stupid. Another theory was, well, and actually I want to go back to that. Please stop, Daffodil. Oh, the dogs. To the whole, like, he was being held captive. People were all over this fucking island looking for this man. Where would they have hid him? Why would they have kept him captive? For money? What are they going to use the money for? They didn't ask for money. Like, what's the reason? It's silly. Another theory was that Michael's mother hired a private investigator in 1979, although, again, the reliability of this story has been questioned. Allegedly, the private investigator went to the island and swapped a boat engine. Why the fuck do they need a boat engine? For the skulls of three men that the tribe claimed were the only white men they had ever killed. Why would they give the skulls up? Why would they give those? Those are like the headhunting. Those are the trophies. What? And like this, it's so dumb. The FBI returned to New York and handed these skulls to the family, convinced one of them was Michael's skull. Here's the thing. None of those people are anthropologists. None of the, you think, if you handed my mom my skull, not my head, my skull, she wouldn't fucking be able to tell you if it was me. Like, our skulls all pretty much look the same, with differences perhaps between races and sex and everything like that. That, like, the fact, also, you just flew back with three fucking skulls. That sounds like bad juju to me. I just don't, whatever. You can tell this story really fucking irritates me. And I don't know why I did it, because as I was reading, I was like, this is so stupid. But it, you know, it's interesting. And I went, okay. So if this event actually occurred, the family never mentioned it. But the History Channel's show called Vanishings reported that Michael's mom did pay $250,000 reward to a private investigator, which was offered for final proof of whether Michael was dead or alive. But again, no remains or physical proof of Michael's death has ever officially been reported or discovered. And I would think that the Rockefellers would make it known. Like, I don't understand why they would hide it. You know what I mean? Like, especially if they thought that these tribesmen killed their son, I would think that they would have made that like front page news again to sit there and be like, look at these savages. Like, it's just, what's the reason? What's the fucking point? And then finally, the last theory that I found was that Michael was actually alive and living amongst the Asmat as part of their tribe. Again, somehow Milt Macklin, he was the journalist who heard he was the one that was like, I didn't see any evidence that he was being held captive, but there is circumstantial but not circumstantial evidence that he was killed by them. He also apparently heard from some mysterious Australian person that apparently ran into a Rockefeller recently, which was in that 1969 when he went, that they ran into each other in the jungle of New Guinea. Please Google the island. It's all forest. So coincidence, okay, but not far from where he apparently disappeared. 40 years after this, a different documentary film crew went to New Guinea to look for Michael, and they actually found unwatched footage from Milt Macklin and saw that there is a momentary glimpse of a white man among the islanders manning a war canoe. The man is naked. He's a bearded white man who, like, even though the quality is pretty poor, they say he depicts a striking resemblance to Michael. I have seen it. I will post it. It 100% does look like him. It's a white man with a beard. You can literally walk down to your local grocery store and pick out 10 of them in one aisle. You know what I mean? Like, that's Michael Rockefeller looked like every other fucking white man with a beard. So I don't know. But I will also say, one, if Milt Macklin was a journalist and he was going down there and he was doing all this film, why didn't he watch the film that he used? Like, what is happening? And two, I already forgot what I was going to say. Oh, I remembered. There are albinos that are amongst the Asmat people. When I was like researching, they are there and they're allowed to live amongst the Asmat, but they are not allowed to marry because it's considered taboo. So it very well could also be an albino person, although they do have brown hair. So now that I said that, that doesn't make a lot of sense. But the film is very grainy. So who knows? Maybe he did join them. Again, where did they hide him? Why? I mean, I guess he could have been like, they're all coming to look for me. Hide me, because otherwise maybe they'd make him come back. I don't know. But regardless of what you believe, what really happened to Michael Rockefeller will likely never be known. And to this day, there's no confirmatory evidence that Michael Rockefeller is alive or dead. And that is the disappearance of Michael Rockefeller. And I don't remember if I said this or not, but he was declared legally dead 3 years after his disappearance in 1964. I know I said that his official cause was listed as drowning. And personally, for once, I believe the more logical thing in this situation, I do think he died by drowning. I do not think that he was killed and eaten by these people. And here's why. Why would they have chosen that time to kill him? There were two Dutch people, him and the other Dutch person that were there immersing themselves in this culture. Why would they have just not killed him then? Like, why wait for that time? Like, that doesn't make any sense. And then all of the people that have been coming and going, why would they just not kill them too? Like, you know what I mean? I don't understand why it would have made this one, you know, you could have had two white people for the cost of the four that you lost. You know, like, none of it makes any sense. And I really hate that the whole narrative is being pushed that he was, like, eaten by cannibals and, like, all of this stuff. It's just, like, it's just very, it's racist is point blank what it is. But it is fascinating nonetheless. I do believe that he drowned. I mean, fuck, trying to swim 12 miles in the ocean. Fuck that, dude. I can barely do a couple laps in the pool. Like, going, like, swimming looks like it would be so easy. And then you do it and you swim like one lane and you're like, I'm done. That's enough. I cannot imagine swimming fucking 12 miles. No, bye. And again, he could have gotten, there are theories that he got eaten by a shark or something like that. But I don't think that he was killed by them. I don't think that he was held captive. I don't think that somebody exchanged a boat engine when they don't even have, like, boats like that. They literally carve their boats out of canoes, or they literally carve their boats out of trees. Like, why would they need that? And why would they just be like, yeah, of all the things, we'll take a boat engine and you can have our three trophies, essentially, of the white men we've, like, I don't know. It's just all dumb. And Carl Hoffman, why were you there making a documentary, posing as a journalist, making a documentary, but you just happened to not have your camera rolling at one of the most opportune times for the whole purpose you were down there? Like, I would think if you're filming a documentary, that camera is rolling 24/7, 365 days a week or a year. You know what I mean? Like, why would you have even turned it off? I don't know. That's my take on it. I wanted to add to this, but it didn't really flow. But one day I think I will cover it. And I learned about it on TikTok, go figure, which if they fucking really do ban TikTok, that'll be the last straw for many people in this generation and the generation under me, because baby, what are you doing? Honey, anyway, but I learned about this on TikTok. There is an island called Sentinel Island, and it's like north of Australia, which when I was like Google Mapsing Papua New Guinea and everything, I really like didn't realize how many little islands and stuff are there. And like, it's just like part of the world that isn't like really seen on those maps that are available. Like, I don't know. It's just there. And it's really interesting to see. There is like one airport on this entire island. I'm trying to think of there's like one town that's the biggest one. And there's like one cell tower there that is for all 65,000 people. And there's one airport there. And that's like it. Like, otherwise they're still like pretty isolated. But anyway, Sentinel Island is apparently one of the last like colonized, non-westernized islands. And anytime that you like try to visit, it's kind of what they describe the Azmats are. Like, there are videos of them like defending their territory essentially. But then I also see videos of people like journalists allegedly with them. So I don't really know, but it does sound pretty interesting. So I did add it to my list. So it's really cool to think, or I don't even know if it's cool. It's like very odd to me to think that there are people that are living like a complete 180 of what the majority of us are living, and maybe don't even know of all the other things going on in the world. And like, part of that sounds like bliss, It sounds real nice, you know, to not be plagued by all of that. But yeah. Anyway, I don't know. Rambling per usual. That's really all. That's all I have today. This was a really cool case. Next week will be a medical case or a medical topic. And yeah, I'm going to start having some people on. I've got some ideas for a couple people that I'm going to have come on, but I'd like to space it. I don't want you to have like three episodes where somebody's on, and I'll probably still only, I'll do them for the weird ones and the true crime ones, but the medicine ones will still just stay you and me, just a combo between you and me. But anyway, as always, if you have any weird medical stuff, crazy true crime stuff, or just weird shit in general, you can send an email to thatsinsanepodcast@gmail.com. I'm also on Facebook at That's Insane Podcast and on Instagram at thatsinsane_pod. Be sure to rate, review, subscribe, comment, share this podcast, let everybody know about it, because it's 2024 and we're not gatekeeping anymore. So why are you gatekeeping? Why haven't you told all of your friends and family? They want to listen to it too. And you're going to bond with them because you didn't know that they love true crime stuff or how weird they really are. But anyway, that's all I have. I'll see you next week for Weird Wednesday. Until then, bye. This podcast was researched, recorded, and edited by me, Aurelia. The music is by my dad. Hi, Dad.